This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I was texting with a friend of mine who works in the ACC. That conference is rumbling right now about Bill Belichick. My friend who works in the ACC says he thinks Belichick's motive may be to set his son up to be the successor at North Carolina after a couple years. You know, family thing, that matters. But even that audio clip of Belichick that we played earlier, it wasn't the same old low grumble on to Cincinnati clip that Bill Belichick used to pull out during media scrums with the Patriots. I don't know. You can't, as a college coach, you can't be removed. You've got to be in it. I think it's why Kenny Dillingham, Dan Lanning, you got to have a lot of energy. You got to be in it all the time. Is Belichick going to have that? Our next guest, Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Great follow on Twitter. Friend of this show. And a guy who is tuned in with the Oregon Ducks football program like nobody else. We bring him on here. Before we get into the Ducks, your rapid reaction to Belichick to North Carolina. In the college game, does it work?
Good God, this is weird. I mean, I don't think the way he treats players at the NFL level, that works, because they're all grown men and it's a business and everyone knows that. That does not work in the college landscape. I cannot wait for him to get a phone call from the receiver that had done nothing and then in week 8 catches 7 passes for 144 yards and 2 touchdowns and wins the game, and he gets an agent call the next day, hey, my guy needs X, Y, and Z or else we're going to go in the portal. Like, that happens, and I can't wait till he deals with that. And or he can't, you know, win on it's fascinating. I will be paying attention to North Carolina football for the first time in a long time in the regular season, and that's why they did this. But it's weird. It's different. It feels weird to say like Mac Brown was replaced by Bill Belichick. That just seems strange.
University of Oregon headed to a Rose Bowl quarterfinal game. They'll get either Ohio State or Tennessee. The ticket allotment for Oregon for the Rose Bowl sold out in about an hour. What do you know about that? And that does that surprise you at all?
No. I've had about 5 or 6 friends or acquaintances that I know that some got them, some didn't. But there's a lot of excitement for this team as there was ahead of the season. I mean, they sold out season tickets at a record pace for the 2024 football season. So the fact that Oregon's Rose Bowl allotment went so quickly doesn't surprise me. It's going to have an impact on the secondary market because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get left out that didn't get tickets that want to go. I know people that have already blindly bought plane tickets and booked Airbnbs and whatnot to go to this game without having tickets, and if they didn't get them, hope they got refundables but if they didn't, they're going to have to find a way. I also think, like, there's an added benefit that we really haven't talked about for the playoffs here. Oregon's fan base is going to know for 3.5 weeks that they're going to the Rose Bowl, and they can start making plans now. They can start looking into hotels and where are they going to travel, how are they going to get there, and who are they going to go with. And it's close. And Tennessee and Ohio State, like, yes, they could buy pre-sale tickets or they could pre-purchase hotels and refund them down the road, but you still got to play a game. You don't know yet if you're going. And you're going to have to make a commitment in about, I don't know, what, 13, 14 days, or less than that, really, from when they play and the game is over. So I think this could benefit especially Oregon because it's close. Ohio State and Tennessee are going to have to travel across the country, but all four teams that are in these first-round byes and automatically get to the bowl games, like they could have huge crowds compared to the other teams.
I'm looking at the matchup like you probably did when the bracket came out, and really, really challenging to see Oregon with the one seed end up with that path. But Dan Lanning, I think, doing the right thing, saying, "Hey, you know, we're gonna beat the best to be the best." What did you make of the bracket when it came out?
You're gonna play the good teams at some point, and you're gonna need to beat the good teams at some point. And theoretically, all 12 of these teams, to levels of degrees, are good. Does Oregon get a little bit of a different schedule or difficult schedule because they may potentially have to play Texas and they may have to eventually play Georgia or whoever comes out of the other side? Yeah, that's true. But I also think that this Oregon team's the only team in college football to go 13-0, and they're only one of two teams that doesn't have a second loss in college in the playoffs. Indiana doesn't have a loss either. They only have one. So, you know, there's going to be some games here where, like, some craziness will happen. And for Oregon, it's look in the mirror. You're damn good. And you've beaten two of these teams already, or three of these teams in these college football playoffs, Penn State being the most recent one. You knocked off Boise State. You knocked off Ohio State. So you've got three wins against playoff opponents. And while Tennessee's, I think, improving, and Ohio State is certainly talented, they both have flaws. And you've gone in the course of a 13-game schedule where you're the most consistent, you're the most dominant, you're the best team. Embrace being that. I think that's kind of what Dan Lanning's mindset's coming from, is you're the best. So who cares who you have to play, because everyone else hasn't been to your level.
And I'm watching even the Penn State game. I thought Oregon's defense did not play well, and yet I felt like Oregon was in control of that game all along.
Agreed.
You and I have texted about this, but I think it's a good discussion. Is this the best Oregon team ever? Is that conversation ongoing? What do they need to do if they want to be the best team ever? I mean, I didn't feel like the 2010 team or the 2014 team. I feel so much more confident about Oregon's ability to win this thing versus those other 2 years. And so it makes me believe this has to be the best team.
I think we can answer this question in two different lenses. Is this the most talented team that Oregon's ever had? That certainly could be in the picture. I think the 2014 team, I think the 2012 team, I think you go back to the 2001 team that won the Fiesta Bowl against Colorado, Joey Harrington's team. That group had a bunch of NFL guys on it. 2019's team had a bunch of NFL guys on it. This one will have that. Is this the greatest team in terms of just the importance of what it means for the program? I think we're getting close to saying yes to this one. I asked Bryce Betcher that question after the Washington game. I asked him, you're very familiar with the history of this program, being a Eugene kid. Is this season now in discussion for the greatest ever in the program? He said, ask me after Penn State. We're striving to be there. That's certainly a goal. We want to be known as the greatest of all time to do it here. I think they're now in that discussion, because if you think about it, every team that's won the Big Ten championship game in its history prior to Oregon Oregon beat this season in schedule. They knocked off Penn State. They beat Michigan. They beat Michigan State. They beat Wisconsin, and they certainly beat Ohio State. Five wins right there against teams that, you know, have come from one of the most prestigious conferences in the sport, and that have all won the conference championship at some point. You look at the conference championships claimed over the regular season. Penn State, the Big Ten recognizes 180 teams that have some claim to a Big Ten championship team. Those five teams that I mentioned have 110 of those championships that are claimed by a team. They beat them all. And then they beat Boise State, and you throw in the fact that they've won eight games this season by 21 or more points. This is the most dominant team that, you know, from a schedule standpoint, that they've had to play that we've seen in a while. And I think this, you know, we heard so much in the off season about, is Oregon going to be able to handle the physicality? Is Oregon going to be able to handle the depth? Is Oregon going to have the defense that's going to be able to play at this level of the Big Ten? Is their offense going to be able to score against these great big defenses in the Big Ten? And they answered all of that. They beat all those teams all in year one. And so I think from a ramification standpoint, Oregon's planted its flag in the Big Ten conference, right in the middle of its landmark, and it said, this is our league. And to do that in year one and walk away and with the way that they won the league in so definitive fashion, it's up there, John. I think if they beat whoever they play in the Rose Bowl and you throw that on, now they're 14 wins in the regular season, which would tie, I believe it's school record for most wins in a year. It's up there, and I think if they can get to the semis, it's probably going to be the greatest team probably in Oregon history.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, with us. Dylan Gabriel, Bo Nix. Is it possible Oregon's better with Gabriel?
That's a good question. I've thought about that. I think Gabriel's got a little bit of, like, fiery gunslinger, I'm going to take risks in him, where Bo was always felt like Bo just, it was like another coach, never really made mistakes, never took chances. And when he did, they were calculated chances. Sometimes Dylan's made some throws where you're like, holy smokes, good thing that didn't get picked, because what were you doing? Or I can't believe you fit that in there. And I think his quick release is really good. I do think Bo is a better passer across the middle of the field than Dylan is, but that's, you're really starting to be, you know, picking, really honing in on finding something to complain about if that's what we're going to be doing. It's an interesting question. I would probably, I don't know. It's one where, like, I want to say yes, but I also, I don't know, John, I want to say no too, because they're so good. They're both Heisman candidates. They're both conference player of the year type guys. I think the offense is really good. And I would probably lean to Bo, but it would be by the thinnest of margins. And we'd really be nitpicking here to pick someone over the other one.
Is it going to be Ohio State or Tennessee for the Ducks?
I kind of think Tennessee. I do not know. I don't trust Ohio State mentally. They're, you know, they lost at home to Michigan, and they've looked bad. Their offensive line is beat up. I think Ryan Day coaches not to lose sometimes. You know, whenever you watch a broadcast, they always talk about, oh, this is the most aggressive on fourth down Ryan Day has been in his time here. And that's true, but it just feels, I don't know, there's a lot of hostility, a lot of tension, and sometimes it's hard to come back from stuff like that. And we already know that if the first sign of struggle in that game, the crowd's going to boo their home team. They're in the playoffs. I mean, the fan base is done with Ryan Day, and there's just a lot of just negativity around them. And I don't know. I think Tennessee's defense is going to be really good. I think their running game is going to be what they're going to lean into. And you know, Will Howard throws for good stats, but just doesn't, I don't know. He's not a guy that that screams to me he's going to take over games and he's going to dominate and carry a program to a big win.
I'm looking at the bracket now, and I'm kind of gathering, you know, I think I said yesterday, I think there are four teams that could maybe win the thing and maybe five or six that could get to the semifinals. And do you think it'll be the usual suspects in the end in the title game and maybe Oregon in there? Or how do you see this unfolding?
That's a good question, because on the other side, like, what happens with Georgia with Beck being out and no longer playing? Like, that makes it really complicated. And I just look at it and think, okay, Oregon, I think Oregon's going to get to the national championship. I think they'll beat whoever comes out of the Tennessee-Ohio State matchup. Don't sleep on Clemson and Texas. I think that will be an entertaining game. And don't sleep on Dabo. And Arizona State's got Scadaboo, who's just a tremendous player at running back, and that will be a fascinating game. But I just trust Oregon overall, those four teams, or those five teams that they could potentially be playing. On the other side, though, Georgia, their defense is really good, but I'm really curious to see about Notre Dame, because when you look at Notre Dame's schedule, and you know they lost the early game to Northern Illinois the second week of the season. They had a good win over Texas A&M to start the year, but Texas A&M turned into an 8-14. You look at Louisville, and they had a win over them by 7, and you know the Cardinal ended up being another 8-14. Like we really don't know, I think, how good Notre Dame is, because their ranked opponents this year were Texas A&M, Louisville, Navy, and Army, and they kind of took care of all of them, but none of them are teams that you sit here and scream, oh my gosh, they're really, really good. But they could be really good. We don't know. I think they're the wild card, and it wouldn't surprise me if Georgia or Notre Dame comes out of the bracket on the other side.
Oregon on defense appeared to have some problems stopping the run, and it surprised me because they were not bad against the run all year. But I saw Tosh Lupoi on the field after the title game. He was the one guy who wasn't jumping around doing cartwheels, you know, performing a snow angel in the confetti. He was kind of standing back a little bit. He was happy, but you could tell he had some stuff on his mind. Is it fixable?
Yeah, it is. And I wonder how much they were, you know, They looked like they were flat-footed against this, you know, against Penn State's offense, and they were reacting instead of just playing football. And at the same time, how many times this season has this defense stepped up and made the plays necessary for the offense to get past having a bad game? I mean, just go back a couple weeks ago in Madison against Wisconsin, Jamari Caldwell hits Locke's arm as he's throwing the ball, and the ball flutters in the air, and Mateo Uyunglele grabs it for the interception game-sealing win. And we should still note, like, the defense made the play at the end of the game against Penn State to win it, to ice it, to seal it, with Nico Reed getting the interception. So, you know, I look at the defense and say, over the course of the year, like, yes, they've been susceptible to playing some games where they've given up some long runs in the run game, but none of them have come back and cost them. None of them have been like, oh my gosh, this is a huge issue. Like they are in deep trouble if they don't get this figured out. I think defensively, with a whole month to prepare for the next opponent, you know, they'll be lined up ready to go. I trust Jordan Birch getting more healthy. Derek Harmon, Jamari Caldwell, two guys that have kind of gone the distance on the defensive line. They now get 3 weeks to rest. That's going to be huge for them. So I put it as an anomaly. And you just have to chalk it up to, like, Penn State played a really good game. They had a good game plan offensively, and it's really hard to double-team a tight end and a guy like Tyler Warren that can go all over the place. They play funky formations. They went tempo, which they really haven't done a bunch this season. So, yeah, I think you tip the cap a little bit to Penn State. And you played probably a C-level, C-minus-level game defensively, and you still won. And it felt like Penn State had to pull out all the tricks, had to pull out all the stops, had to have just miraculous plays. I mean, that Drew Aller touchdown pass on fourth down, as he's got, like, Mateo pulling on his his jersey and his strings of his jersey are pulling out because they're stretching so much, and he rifles the ball in between two DBs who just collide at the same time with the receiver, and they hold on to it. And think about how many big plays they had to have happen and it still be an eight-point game. And Oregon played a really poor performance, and they still had the lead basically the entire way. So I look at this, and it was an anomaly. There's things they have to correct. They 100% acknowledge that. They were not good in certain areas. They know that. But there hasn't been a trend all year over 3 or 4 or 5 weeks where it's, hey, this is really hurting you. You're not fixing it. It's going to hurt. It's going to come back and hurt you, and then it burns you. That's never happened. And so that's where the confidence comes from, is over 13 games, the defense has been really, really good, and you just have to have confidence it'll get fixed.
Matt Prame, 24/7 Sports, with us. Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if Penn State came through the other side of that bracket. I mean, if they play that physical against everybody, who knows? 2025 regular season schedule, Big Ten schedule comes out. Oregon's got it. They go to Penn State in September. They got the Civil War game in the fourth week of the season at home. They go to Rutgers in October. They go to Iowa in November. What jumped out at you as you saw the 2025 schedule?
First thing was the Northwestern game, September 13th. There was a little bit of scuttle wondering if that would be a November game, and why is that important? Because the Northwestern in November is playing in Wrigley Field. So that's not happening, which would have been cool. Your reward is you get to go watch a football game in a lacrosse soccer stadium on Lake Michigan, which will still be truly fascinating and fun to watch, but Wrigley Field would have been pretty cool. September 27th at Penn State feels like it's going to be a bye week, or it's going to be a whiteout, a night game. That'll be fascinating, awesome to watch. But then after that, like get through Indiana October 11th, and you play a road game across the country against Rutgers, and then a home game against Wisconsin. You get a bye week, and then you go to Iowa, and you get Minnesota, USC at home, and you close out at Washington. Like, it's a very favorable schedule. You've got one road game that truly scares you. You've got another one at Iowa that feels like it could be a defensive stalwart battle similar to what Wisconsin was. We'll see what Washington's like. You know, they've had some guys hit the portal already. We don't know yet what they're going to add to the portal. Recruiting's been okay for the Huskies, so we'll see what happens there. But it's a rivalry game, but these programs feel like they're starting to separate a little bit on and off the football field. But nonetheless, it's a late game. It's a November game on Montlake. Those can always be crazy and interesting. But I just look at the second half of the schedule and think, get through Penn State, then beat Indiana, and you've got – it's going to be survive in advance. Doesn't matter really how you win, just win, and it could set up where you've strung together a bunch of wins in a row. The Oregon State one, to me, also popped out of, is it the last Civil War? And, you know, these two teams don't have a game scheduled on the docket down the road. Is something going to get worked out? Probably not. Who knows? But is this going to be the last one?
We shall see. I find it interesting that nobody is looking at that schedule and talking about USC. I mean, and they've become an afterthought. And the eyes go to Penn State. The eyes go to Indiana. Then you look at Wisconsin, you go, okay, that's a home game. And then you start to look at where's the Civil War. And then, oh, there's Washington at the end. When I looked at it the first time, I just glossed right over USC. I mean, it says so much about what USC has become.
It's pretty sad. And you think about it where Oregon's not competing against them, against a lot of recruits anymore. Simply just they're winning. And guys aren't – the school that got the top talent isn't looking at USC. Or, for whatever reason, Lincoln Riley is just saying, we're not going to really go after SoCal recruits, even though he then sits in front of the media and talks about it, how it's important to do and that they feel like they need to have a footprint in the SoCal area. But then the data shows they don't offer anybody. You talk to their players, and they say that they hardly hear from USC. So when, like, portal stuff happens and guys hit the portal, you look at it and be like, it used to be a case of if a guy was leaving USC for whatever reason, Oregon, Oregon State, Washington, Cal, ASU, Arizona, everybody was clamoring for for the leftovers. Oh, this guy's leaving. We got to get him. We got to add him. He's gonna come to our school. He's instantly going to be one of our better players. That is no longer the case. I don't know how many, USC's recruiting, Oregon's recruiting a couple guys that hit the portal from USC, Bear Alexander being the biggest one, the defensive tackle. But it's not nearly as much as you and I have grown up to thinking the brand power, the star power that's associated with that school. It's no longer there. And it's very strange to say that.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. You're the best, man. I appreciate you joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks, John.
There he goes. You look at the schedule, people asking me, which game should you go to? Well, I think any of those games, you're at a live sporting event. I was not a kid who grew up getting to go to all the games. And so I am a little envious of these, people who go to all the games, go to every game. And I loved having the guest on earlier this week who is making his mission to see every Oregon football game home and away this season. He's honoring his father, Nathan Reed, honoring his dad. I think that's cool. But like Nathan, I grew up in, we went to San Jose State games. I went to one East-West Shrine game. I went to one NFL game. People are asking me, what's the bucket list game? I'm like, any of them, man. Go to any live sporting event and you're winning. But places, stadiums you want to see on the road, go to Penn State if you can get there. Go to Iowa if you can get there. I agree with Matt that the Northwestern game, had it been at Wrigley Field, yeah, you go check out Wrigley. That would be fun. But other than that, just go to a live sporting event. Be there in person sometime. Punch It Audio's coming up, plus Jerry Palm in the 5 o'clock hour. Anna's got the 5 at 5 today. Leave it here.
Miles here is an electrician running wiring for this new home build.
Good morning.
Miles doesn't have time for funny business.
I guess.
Miles traded up to Sirius Commercial Auto Insurance from GEICO for customized coverage that grows with his business, all for seriously low rates.
So where's the GEICO surprise cameo?
Come again?
Like some big famous football player or something. He's going to bust through that wall, isn't he?
No, this ad is serious business.
Guys, get over here. You got to see this.
No, there's nothing funny over here. Sorry. Get more with GEICO Commercial Insurance. Trade up today at geico.com/commercial.